Contained herein are the heresies of Radolf Burntwine, erstwhile monk-turned-traveling medical investigator. Join me as I uncover the blasphemous truth of a plague-ridden world, that ours is not a loving God, and we are not its favored children. The heresies of Radolf Burntwine, coming January 2nd, wherever podcasts are available.
The Toddcast Podcast. Find us on iTunes, Spotify, YouTube, and at toddhancock.ca.
Excellent. Alan, thank you so much for taking the time here this morning to join the Toddcast in Vancouver, Canada. Is it morning where you are?
Yeah, it's 11 in the morning.
Okay. Where are you based out of? Where do you live?
I'm in New York City.
Oh, you're still there?
Yeah.
Well, born and raised, like, straight up, you're still there. Like, dude, you've been there your whole life then.
Fifth generation New Yorker.
Oh, that's incredible. And I guess we'll get right into it. Like, you've been on Broadway. You were on Broadway as a little kid. Now, is that the story that I read where you kind of like volunteered as an audience member? Like, is that
correct?
How you got into stage acting?
That's it. I think, you know, I think you ask yourself all the time in this business that I'm in why you do it. And I think at eight, somehow that the excitement of having people react and laugh was exhilarating. And I guess that's really what it still is now. It's just fun to hear people react and I guess make them laugh or cry, I guess.
Yeah, sure. Like any emotion, I suppose. Right. And yeah. So like, what was it that you were watching around that time? And like,
it was a magic show actually. Oh. And we went to a school class. And we were in the auditorium and they asked for volunteers. And so I volunteered and they took me on the stage and they took me backstage. This was in the 50s. And they said, we're going to put something on your face. And when we put you on the stage, we're going to turn out the lights and you're going to see the reaction. Well, at the time, I mean, again, this was in the 50s. So they put, you know, I guess paint, and they had a black light, which was a brand new thing then, right? So they turned the lights out, they turned the black light on, and I had all these squiggles, I guess, on my face, and all these, you know, 6, 7, 8-year-old kids were like, ah, and so that was what I did.
That's incredible.
But I just knew I liked being up there. That was the thing.
Of course, like you feel that in your soul almost. That's right. Easy as that sounds, right?
That's
and
right.
So tell us about getting a role in The Three Musketeers. Like, in the same, still, you're still super, super young at that point.
Yeah. So I came home and I told my mother that I enjoyed it. And so she enrolled me in a group in New York called the Children's Professional Acting Guild. And I guess this was 1958. And there was a production going on of The Three Musketeers. And so they called the woman that was leading this children's acting group and asked if she had a couple of kids that she could send to be in it. And I was one of them. Didn't have a speaking part, but I was on Broadway.
At nine.
Yeah. Yeah.
So you've covered what? Seven decades? You've done something on Broadway?
Correct.
Is it like your whole life? I know you did. You drove some taxi and you went and taught English in Paris, and which is super cool. Like, what a cool life experience to have.
Yeah.
How old were you for that, by the way?
So when I graduated college, I majored in French and theater in college. And so when I was 22-ish, 23, I had to make a decision what I wanted to do. Mm. And the politics weren't the greatest in America at the time. So I decided to go to France. And I went to France, and that's when I lived there for 10 years and started and taught English there, started a business. And after 10 years, I came back. And I dabbled in theater and film there. Didn't do a lot, but I did some.
Yeah, yeah. And didn't you meet your husband there as well?
I did.
Like, imagine not going there and how different your life would be today, right?
In fact, I was 23. I was teaching English, and he was 17 and a half.
Oh.
And he was my student.
Really?
Yeah. And so we met, and that was 50 years ago, and we're still together. So,
yeah. Well, that's great. And what does he do?
So we started a business together in France. We brought it to America, and we still own that business. We're in the, we have retail stores throughout New York City. We're in the gift industry. So the names of the stores are PIC, P-I-Q. We have one in Grand Central Terminal. We have one in Rockefeller Center, one in Hudson Yards. So he still is somewhat involved in that. But wow, we have a great staff now, and they're really pretty much running the show.
That's great. I'm curious, like, what were you watching as a kid, and like, what influenced you to go down this path?
I guess, you know, this was the 50s, and I'm thinking of watching Howdy Doody. I know my grandmother took me to a taping of, well, I guess it was live then. It was a taping of Howdy Doody, and I was in the kids' audience. I remember Clarabelle squirting seltzer at me. But I think probably my grandmother loved theater. And so when I was 8, she started taking me to Broadway plays. And I remember the first one I saw was Sound of Music with Mary Martin. I saw Bye Bye Birdie with Cheetah Rivera. And I think what I loved about it, and what I still love when I'm on stage, is the excitement and the camaraderie that the actors have together. And I remember my favorite part was always the curtain calls, because that's when you could see how the actors were so enthusiastic about what they did. And I think that kind of inspired me and excited me about that industry. And even now I see, because right now I'm in a play off Broadway, and I see that the relationship between the actors is thrilling. It's thrilling.
And so it's different than screen acting? In that regard, obviously it's different in screen acting for the acting part and the actual creation part, but like, is it different in the relationship part?
Yeah, yes, because I think what happens when you're on stage, first of all, you're going on a journey. You know, you start at the beginning of the play, you go to the end, and you're going on that journey together.
Yeah.
But when you're doing a film, it's so discombobulated because you don't start at the beginning and end at the end. You're all different places. And often you can be in a film and you don't even work with most of the actors in the film. You're just doing your scenes. So you don't really get that feel of from beginning to end.
Until you watch it in the theater and you're like, wow, that was really well put together.
That's right. You're like, oh, they were in that? Oh, yeah, that's right. We were in totally it together. Right. You know?
That's awesome. How old were you for your first paying role?
My first paying role? I think it was about 10 years old. There was public TV in New York. They were doing The Lottery by Shirley Jackson.
Okay.
And they hired me to play one of the kids, one of the townspeople. That was the first time I got paid for that.
That's pretty fun, hey? And do you think it's imperative for someone to have a manager?
Well, it's a good question, because I don't have a manager now. Oh. I had a manager for many years. She died during COVID, and she was helpful to me. And now I'm looking for a manager. Oh. So I've been doing, since COVID, I've been doing an enormous amount of work, but I still would rather have a manager. It's not easy to find a manager, especially at a certain age. I've spoken to a number of people, and you know, if you're young in your 20s and you're starting a career, they want you because they're going to grow your career. And if you're very well known, they want you because it's an automatic income. But when you're kind of older and not famous, it's not so easy. So I am looking for a manager. So the question is, I think it's not essential, because I'm working, I'm in an off-Broadway play now, so it's not essential, but it's something that I think I know I need and want.
Yeah, for sure. Well, let's talk about that off-Broadway play. It's called Party.
It's called Party.
With the question mark. I'm not saying it like being a smart ass. It's actually called Party.
Party. It's like Party.
Party. how good does that feel to be back and on stage and in front of people? Like, it must be so fulfilling, hey?
Yeah. Yeah, I love doing it. Again, I love the, it's just, you know, it's so, you see award shows and they, and someone will get up and say, oh, we're a family and I want to thank the actors that I'm working with. And you sit there and go, yeah, yeah, this is so trite, you know?
Yeah.
But when you're actually doing it, it it's really true. Is that, it really is true, because you count on each other so much. You know, if someone forgets a line or skips a line, you all look at each other. You all know. You can't let the audience know.
Sure,
so
yeah.
You're all working together constantly. So it's great. The play is really good. We're getting fabulous response from the audience. It's wonderful. I love it. I love every minute of it.
That it must be something when you have to act on your feet like that real quick. When, like you say, if somebody forgets a line or they just skip over a line, you're like, oh shit, here we go.
Yeah.
But now and we've got to kind of improv almost.
Well, someone will skip a line and they might fast forward two pages. And then you're all looking at each other and you're like,
how do we
get back two pages without letting anyone else know we're doing it? So all of you, like, we're six and we'll be six on stage. And again, it's that look that we give each other and we're like, uh-oh, we're in trouble. But yeah, we all know, and we all know we have to get out of it, and we all kind of help and figure out a way to do it. It's a lot of fun.
Yeah, yeah. And of course, you've got to be super, super happy about the success of the cold, dead look in your eyes. Like, holy crap, did that thing just plow through wins? Like, yeah. 13 wins, 14 nominations. Like, when you're creating something like that, Alan, can you tell, like, that it will be critically acclaimed, that people will love what you're working on?
I guess when I read the script, I saw there were some scenes that for me would be important.
Yeah.
And I think that's what actors will do when they choose to take a role or not. I certainly know I do it. If I'm offered a role and I read the script and it's just like a flatline role for me, it's not interesting for me to do it particularly. I want it to have some meat.
Right.
And so with that cold, dead look in your eyes, originally my role was supposed to be for a woman. And when I auditioned for another role, the director kind of saw me in that woman's role and then changed it to a man. And so when he asked me to do it, I felt that it was a good role for me. And so I wouldn't say that I knew I would win the awards I won, but I knew that it was a good role.
Yeah. Yeah. Really interesting. Like, I haven't seen the movie itself, but I went to, you know, the sizzle page and watched the trailer and, you know, read the synopsis and all that. Really forward thinking movie. Like, really, like, I want to watch the movie now that I've seen the trailer. It looks super engaging.
He's a very talented writer, director, owner to Cal.
Yeah.
And he's done a lot of work, and I wish he had more recognition because he's very good.
Well, I would think that this would push him into the recognition role, you know, like, there's a spotlight. So now, like, attack.
We hope so.
Yeah, for sure. And what was the last movie that you saw in a theater?
So I'm a member of the Hamptons Film Festival. I'm one of their founders, and so I go to the festival. So I've seen a lot that they did, and probably the last one, I guess, there I saw Maestro.
Okay. And what are you binge watching lately? Like, the shows you just can't get enough of.
Well, frankly, I got cast in this play the end of December, and every spare moment, it's line memorization, working on the lines. So since January, I haven't even turned on the television.
Wow.
You know, I think that's what happens. I talk about this with the other actors. When you're working on a project and it's a lot of memorization, that's really all you could think about. And if I sit down to watch TV to get distracted, I'm like, no, I have to work on these lines.
Yeah, interesting. So
I haven't watched anything since January.
Yeah, yeah. And like, as you know, like, I don't want to call you a content creator, but like ultimately what you do is you create things for people. So it's interesting to get that take that, you know, you almost become too busy in your world creating things for people that you can't even enjoy what other people have created for you.
And also I think what happens is that you start to live the character.
Yeah.
And you start to react as the character would react. And it becomes all-encompassing. You know, I don't walk around and talk to people like my character, but I'll go to the supermarket and I'll think, what would he eat? You know, or is this the food he would want? Because the thing I love about acting, I think, one of the things I love most is I really, it sounds trite, but I really enjoy people. So I enjoy getting into someone's skin to kind of understand them more. And it does, it becomes obsessive. And on the other hand, the minute the show ends or the film ends, it's like gone. I might not even remember the lines anymore the next day. It just leaves.
Yeah, yeah. Well, I think that's super odd in your world, though. Like, I've heard of some actors literally the whole time that they're on set, they do respond, they do reply as character. Don't address me as my real name. Like,
yeah.
And I guess that, yeah. I mean, that makes sense, right? If you're trying to be a character, stay in character.
Yeah. And different actors have different techniques for it.
Yeah.
You know, whatever works for them. The woman that plays my wife in this play, she is like that. You know, it's hard sometimes to talk to her about anything other than what my character would say when we're together.
Right. Yeah, fair enough.
She's fabulous.
Yeah. Alan, outside of acting, I'd love to kind of pick your brain about other parts of your life, if that's cool, for a bit.
Mm-hmm.
Are you a big sports person? Like, do you watch? Like, who's your team if you're watching?
I'm not a sports person. I swim. I love swimming, but my big thing is traveling. I just going to the theater and traveling. I love traveling. I travel all over the world, and I have, and looking forward to traveling more.
Yeah.
So, traveling is where I spend my time.
Yeah, it's, and money too, right? Like for me as well, like. Music and travel for me are the two things that I really don't care what it costs. Like, unless it's like so extravagant, like that I couldn't possibly afford it.
Yeah.
But like, so where are your, like, say, give me your top three favorite places you've been to then.
I guess I think the most exciting place and the place that has the most influence on my life probably is when I go to Botswana or some animal safari, not for hunting, but just looking, because you sit there and you watch these elephants, for example, cross in front of you, and you think they've been doing this for hundreds of thousands of years. And in fact, the same path, the same watering hole, and you realize how minute you are and how yet you have to savor every minute that you're here, because we're here for such a short time. So when I'm in that type of environment, it puts life in perspective for me. So I think that would be my absolute favorite place to go. And I love that. I also love, I go to India often and go on Ayurvedic cure for 3 weeks, which is an old kind of way of dealing with your body and food. That's very spiritual, although I'm not particularly spiritual, but it's a very nice calming thing. And then how do you not like France or Italy or
England? Any of those places. You know, I mean, it's incredible, right? I've only been once over to that part of the world, and I could have just stayed there my whole life, you know?
Just so good. And I think what you said about spending money, I think that of all the things I've spent money on in my life, the only expense I don't regret at all is anything I've ever spent on travel.
Sure.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Yeah. Are you a good cook? Like, if you have
that's also one of my hobbies. That's one of my big hobbies.
Yeah, I kind of felt that was going to be a yes for me. Same for me. I love cooking. It's, for whatever reason, it really relaxes me. But
me too.
So when you have friends over, like if you have dinner guests and stuff, like what are you and your husband setting up? Like what's the night? What are you cooking to impress?
So I love to cook, and I think what makes me a good cook is not the quality of the food I make, but the fact that I can make a dinner for many people and don't get nervous about it. So every year I do a July 14th party where I live. And this year I cooked for 85 people. In 85. 10 days, I'm having people over from the Hamptons Film Festival. There's going to be 40 people, and I'm going to make dinner for 40 people. So it's not necessarily what I make. It's just that I make something and it seems to come out good. And people enjoy it. I love champagne, so it's kind of my weakness.
Yeah, yeah. Crack a bottle, away we go.
Yeah, that's one. Yeah, yeah. That's no, a big weakness of mine. Well, I love desserts. I love making. I love, love, love. And often when I know when I'm going to make dinner for people, in my mind, I'll start with what dessert I'm going to make. And then I'll work backwards from the dessert.
Interesting. Well, you're blowing my mind. I was expecting, like, you know, you're cooking for, you know, 5, 6, 8 people, not 40, 80.
Yeah.
That's a massive thing to chew off. I couldn't
and even. And I have Passover Seder every year, and I have 30 people for the Seder. And I make the gefilte fish that my grandmother made and, wow. You know, matzo balls and all that. And I just chop liver. I enjoy doing it. I
really do enjoy doing it. Oh, that's great. Hit us with the music that has been through your life. Like, start as a kid, what was the music in your house, and what would you put on for a dinner party?
My mother adored, you know, the American standards, so yeah. You know, and she had many, many 78s, and so that's what we would listen to growing up. And then when I went to college, that was in the LSD days, so I guess anything related to that. I did have long hair. I was a hippie. Jimi Hendrix and Blood, Sweat, and Tears and Janis Joplin.
Yeah,
all of that. And Woodstock. Then now I go back to my mother's favorites. You know, I'm big Frank Sinatra, and I love Broadway musicals. So I think the Broadway musical is probably, since the first time seeing Sound of Music with my grandmother to now, that's probably the most constant thread in my musical life.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
And there's something about gay men liking Broadway musicals. I don't know.
Yeah, no doubt. I'm not going to touch that. there must be something about those, like those old, those, you know, the standards, that it must feel like comfort music for you.
Yeah, it's kind of like eating meatloaf, right? If you listen to Frank Sinatra, it just makes you feel. And I wonder what a 20-year-old today, what their comfort music will be when they're in their 60s or 70s.
Right. It couldn't possibly be Taylor Swift, could it? Or Drake? Or maybe it is. Maybe it is.
Yeah.
You know, because for me, my comfort music is the stuff that my mom listened to.
Which was what?
ABBA, Steve Miller Band, the Eagles, some Zeppelin, you know, stuff like that, Little River Band, Dolly Parton, Kenny Rogers, you know, stuff like that. Yeah.
Okay.
Which, of course, you know, it's not something I put on and like, oh, I can't wait to hear the ABBA Voulez-Vous album. But if it's on, I know every word in it, and it makes me feel good.
It makes you feel good.
Yeah. And what was the first concert you went to?
The first concert that I ever went to. The first concert probably was in college, you know. Probably was in college, and it would have been Peter, Paul, and Mary.
Mm.
Or, no, I think it was probably Barbra Streisand in Central Park.
Mm.
I think it was before. Yeah, I think it was Barbra Streisand in Central Park.
Was she a singer before
She did. She played in Greenwich Village. That's where she got her start. And then they put her in a show. I think it was I Can't Get It For You Wholesale. And then from there, they put her in Funny Girl.
Because I read something the other day and it blew my mind. Did you know that Barbara Streisand is in the top 20 of the most records sold in the United States?
Wow. Yeah, because her beginning career, she was a singer and she sold lots of records. Lots of records.
Yeah. Like up there with like Garth Brooks and AC/DC and Fleetwood Mac and Michael Jackson. And like, what?
And she's really talented. I mean,
yeah.
She's really
talented. Yeah. Yeah. It's super oddball question, Alan. If you want to skip it, you can. Do you believe aliens have visited us?
Absolutely. I think anyone that would give a categoric no to that is an idiot. Because how could you not believe that something else exists out there? You can be doubtful. You can say, I want the proof. But how could you not believe that there's something else going on? You know, or how could you be so closed-minded to say, no, I don't believe it? So, of course I do.
Yeah. Visited, maybe live among us?
Well, when I was about 12 years old, I was out walking the dog. And I looked up and I saw what you would think would be a flying saucer. And I went home and I called the radio station and they told me that there were hundreds of people in my neighborhood that had called saying the same thing.
Wow.
Now, what was it? I don't know. This was a long time ago. But the more you research, the more you hear, and the more you listen to people testifying to Congress and everything, the more you hear people saying, knowledgeable people saying that there are recorded incidents. So, yeah, why not? Why wouldn't it be? Why wouldn't that be possible?
Yeah. Yeah. Well, I talked to a guy in a band called Gob. It was the drummer in the band. And I asked the question. He's like, oh, my God, I can't believe you're asking this question. Like, yeah, I believe that not only have they visited, but the same thing he saw, you know, in between towns, he's driving in the van and they stopped because they saw something. They went had to pee, but they saw something in the sky and they were compelled to walk toward it. And then it started coming to them. And then he said he just felt such an overwhelming fear and like couldn't move and like hair on their arms were standing up. And he's like, and why would I say shit like that? Like,
that's right.
Just makes you that's sound right. crazy.
That's right. That's but right.
It happened to me.
Of course. Like, of course. I believe in all that. I believe in, you know, spirit, the soul of a person being present, things coming back. This is just since you asked, and I'll tell you, my mother had a favorite song, and it's a song that's not the most popular song. It's not one that we would sing, but she had this favorite song. So I'm at the theater that a couple of weeks ago when we started the show, and the director had put together five or six songs to play as the audience is coming in. Mm-hmm. And I'm sitting backstage waiting, and there's this song, my mother's favorite song. Now, she didn't know me. The director didn't know me, clearly didn't know my mother, clearly would have never known what my mother's favorite song was. And there are, what, 2 million songs she could have chosen to play? She chose that one. And so now every night before I go on stage, I hear this song playing, which is my mother's favorite song. So how could I not say that somewhere my mother said, I'm here?
Yeah. Wow. What a trip. Hey.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So cool.
Yeah.
All right. I told you I'd be maybe 20 minutes. We're into half hour here. So I'll wrap it up. I'll give two more questions I'll let you go here. It's not a question. It's more of a, do you have a near death story where you're like, holy shit, I could have just died there?
Well, that's a good question because I do. I was on a trip in Africa and I got I had my appendix out 6 months earlier, and sometimes you get strictures where it rotates. So I didn't know what it was. And I got this and I was really, really, really sick. All of a sudden they rushed me to the hospital and the care in the place I was wasn't necessarily what it could or should have been in other places in the world. So I was in the hospital bed and I was dying. And I literally saw my body come out and I watched me from the top of the room looking down. And about 10 minutes, or to me it was 10, but maybe it was an hour or whatever, a friend who I was with came and said, "We just chartered a plane to get you to New York." And they did. And the doctor, when I got to the New York hospital, they said, "If you had been there another 3 or 4 hours, you were dead." So that was a near-death experience. I saw it. I saw my life in front of me. I saw me lying there dead.
Dude, that's crazy.
So you asked the question. I had an answer for you.
Wow. Wow. All right. This could be the easiest. It could be the toughest. Can you pick just one career highlight?
Yes. Yes. I was in, when I got my Screen Actors Guild card, because I auditioned and got a role in Knots Landing.
Okay,
and they nice. Flew me to LA, and it was on the Warner Brothers lot, and I was waiting to be called, and I was, you know, I guess 30-ish, and the emotion, the excitement was beyond. But while I was waiting, someone said to me, "Oh, you want to go and look at the costume wing of Warner Brothers?"
Yeah.
And they took me in there, and the head of costumes walked me through every single costume that had ever been in any movie, whether it be Sound of Music or Gone with the Wind, or, and I just started crying. I just started crying.
Sure.
It wasn't performing, but it was such a highlight. I'll never forget that.
Yeah.
I'm sure I could think of others, but that one comes to my mind right away.
But and how cool, because that's like something that most people wouldn't have.
Yeah.
You know, to walk through and see all these things and all these clothes and all the, everything that, you know, your mind remembers and knows and loves, right?
Yeah.
Like,
yeah.
Totally understand why you would cry doing that.
Yeah.
Crazy.
Yeah.
Well, congrats on the success of Party.
Thank you.
And thank you again for jumping on the podcast here in Vancouver, Alan.
You're
Alan Sepos on Instagram. Are you on Twitter? Are you on TikTok? Do you have
just Instagram, Facebook, and I have a website.
Okay, great. Well, thank you again for doing this. And I'll tag you when we're throwing this stuff around online. Have a great day.
Thank you. Same to you.
Follow along on Instagram, Twitter, Facebook, YouTube, and SoundCloud. Find us at Toddcast Podcast.
Have you ever watched a futuristic sci-fi movie and wondered, but wait, could any of this really happen? And will I live long enough to see it? That's what our show Hypothetical is about. I'm Carrie Bechet, and on this podcast, we ask what-if questions about the future. Like, what if we could read minds? What if the world's digital data was erased all at once? What would happen if the Yellowstone supervolcano erupted? Then we explore that question two ways, through speculative science fiction and through dialogue with brilliant scientists. The result is a genre-bending narrative that's interwoven with real facts provided by literal geniuses. And spoiler alert, a lot of the science fiction out there, it's not nearly as far-fetched as you might think. Come time travel with me into the future on Hypothetical. New episodes on Tuesdays, available on all your favorite podcast apps. Just search Hypothetical. That's HYPERTHETICAL.